Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Before we get into all things chronic pain, which this is such a relevant topic for a course that we have coming up as a challenge we'll all be doing together so soon, but I can't announce what that is just yet. However, you can get a massive discount just by signing up for free on our VIP list. This is a completely free list that you just sign up for, and you're going to get discounts that no one else will see. I promise. No one else on the email list, no one else on social media, no one will get this discount for any of our courses, challenges, or programs that we have coming out, except you. All you have to do is sign up at docgenfit.com/VIP. That's docgenfit.com/VIP. We'll have it in the show notes linked up as well, but go ahead there, sign up. It's completely free. You just enter your name and email, and you're going to get a secret discount code for a course that we have coming up, a challenge that we'll all be moving through that's going to help to keep any chronic pain away or reduce symptoms. But I can't talk about it too much. I don't want to give too much away. I promise you're going to love this new challenge that we have coming up. But again, if you sign up for VIP, even if this upcoming challenge you feel like isn't for you, any of the future courses and challenges and plans and programs or anything else that we have coming up, you're going to get an exclusive discount. So if you haven't yet, please sign up, drgenfit.com/VIP.
So excited to welcome in our guest today, Dr. David Clark, who is the president of the Association for the Treatment of Neuroplastic Symptoms, a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to ending the chronic pain epidemic. Dr. Clark holds an MD from the University of Connecticut School of Medicine and is board certified in internal medicine and gastroenterology. His organization's mission is to advance the awareness, diagnosis, and treatment of stress-related, brain-generated medical conditions. You can learn more at their website, symptomatic.me. So excited for this because chronic pain is so prevalent in society today, and there is such a need for good information when it comes to this topic. Let's get into it. Dr. Clark, thanks so much for being with us today. We absolutely love talking about pain, about chronic conditions, because it goes a little deeper than what is perceived on the surface level. And I know that that is your expertise, and you've treated thousands of patients dealing with persistent and chronic pain and illness conditions. And we're excited to be able to pick your brain a little bit today.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on the show. And absolutely, it fits right in with the optimal body. If you're not going to have an optimal body if you're in pain or have some other form of illness. Great subject.
Yes. And, you know, and I think it's different having a MD on the show rather than PTs. So we're PTs, right? We come from a movement background, but having someone else be able to talk into this, especially, I feel like sometimes people don't feel heard when they go to their doctor. People don't feel acknowledged in their pain symptoms and in their pain journey. So what made you even want to go down this road of specializing in chronic pain?
Well, you know, I was trained, as we all were, in the fact that structures of the body, the organs of the body, are responsible for pain or illness. I mean, that's the basic assumption that almost everybody has, that was certainly a part of our formal training. But I found out in the eighth year of my formal training that there's a whole other category that can cause pain or illness, and that is generated by the brain. And the brain, you know, it's got nerve pathways all over the place. And if these change in an unfortunate direction, it can end up producing symptoms in the body from head to toe, whether it's chronic pain or otherwise. And the difficulty with it is that when the physician does the diagnostic test looking for structural damage, looking for organ disease, they typically don't find it. Or if they do find something, it turns out not to be responsible for the condition. And these symptoms are absolutely real. I mean, they're every bit as real as symptoms from any other cause. But they frustrate the physicians, and They don't know where to turn next, and they do start sometimes to kind of push the patients away or not listen to them, or imply that the symptoms aren't real or that they're all in your head. And it turns out that that's not true at all. And it also turns out that if you know what to look for, you can diagnose and treat these conditions as successfully as anybody else. And there's a growing number of physical therapists in the United States and in Europe, for that matter, that are turning to the approach that my colleagues and I advocate, uncovering the issues that can change the nerve pathways in the brain, which is stresses, emotions, traumas, other challenges in life that can happen to anybody. And by bringing these out to the surface, we can usually have a successful approach. And people who've been in pain or ill for years, sometimes for decades, can start to see relief, sometimes pretty quickly. So it's a very positive approach that's now backed up by controlled research studies from across North America.
Interrupting real quick, because I want to talk about something that too many of us have experienced, and this is leg cramping. They'll sneak up on you mid-run after a long day on your feet, or worst of all, in the middle of the night when you're trying to sleep. And if you didn't hear, I actually experienced leg cramping during my last pregnancy. And this is what I want you to know, that leg cramps are often tied to electrolyte imbalances, especially with sodium and potassium. These minerals fuel what's called the sodium-potassium pump, and it's the system that allows your muscles to contract and relax properly. And when it's off balance, signals misfire and your muscles can seize up. Where water can help, but it doesn't always solve the problem. And what actually helped me, and of course what I turned to during pregnancy when I was especially feeling this, was my Element. These electrolytes are so crucial, and it was my go-to when I was pregnant, especially to help with the leg cramping and especially to help with the depletion that I feel when I'm nursing 24/7. Element gave me the sodium, potassium, and magnesium my body needed without any of the sugar or junk you find in most sports drinks and really other brands that have electrolytes. And honestly, the flavors are unmatched. You're guaranteed to find one you love, and that's why when you head to drinkelement.com/optimal, that's drinklmnt.com/optimal, you'll get a free sample pack with your purchase so that you can explore the flavors that they have available. And I'm telling you, you will not be disappointed. My favorite to start with is the raspberry salt, but Dom loves the citrus, and really, you can't go wrong. I'm telling you, you're gonna love it. So go get that and kick those leg cramps down the road.
Jen and I are both, we're kind of not, well, non-traditional physical therapists. I mean, we have a podcast, so that is a clue right there. But even when we started in our very early training as physical therapists and we were going into clinicals, I remember clinical instructors of mine almost reprimanding me for allowing the patient to talk so much, for allowing our first, whatever it was, 45-minute or 50-minute session evaluation. I would just let them talk through their journey, talk through their stressors, talk through some of the traumas that seemed to be related to what they were feeling. And I just always thought it was backwards when they would reprimand me for letting the patient get everything out. Because within that story, they talked about just what you said. I've seen 20 different providers for this, and no one's able to, you know, figure out what's going on, and nobody listens to me, and all this kind of stuff, all these frustrations. I thought it was a little bit backwards. And when I started practicing myself, Jen and I both have experiences where we let these patients talk, we do some quick breathwork exercises with them, and they sit up at the end of the session and say, "Wow, I feel better right now than I have in the last, you know, 5 years." And why is that? Why would, when you just let somebody talk about their history, do a little bit of breath exercise, why would they suddenly feel better from that when they've had this pain for 20 years?
Yeah, well, you are honoring their experience. So many of my patients have been made to feel like there's something wrong with them mentally, that they are psychologically weak in some way, that they can't handle their own stress, that their symptoms are imaginary. So they've been essentially disrespected by the system for symptoms that are every bit as real as anybody else's. And so by listening to them, you are honoring that experience. You are making them feel like they have a real condition that you as a professional should be able to help them with. And then doing the breath exercise is a way of regulating a nervous system that is essentially out of kilter or out of whack. You're bringing down the stress level by doing the breathing exercises. And those two things, the honoring and the breathing to re-regulate, to begin to re-regulate the system, are very powerful. But I got the same pushback you did. I mean, I was trained as a gastroenterologist, which means I was putting endoscopes inside of people, and that's what the expectation was. So there was some pushback about me sitting and spending so much time listening to people instead of putting endoscopes in them. But it turned out that for about a third of my patients, the listening part and the understanding of what they had been through was the key to their diagnosis and treatment.
I mean, it's wild that we live in a world where we live in a medical system that just doesn't have the time, I would say, to listen to everyone's journey and understand where the root causes of these pain journeys can be coming from. But we also want to rely and make sense of our pain so much, right? And so I want to get the image. I want something to be telling me this is why I have pain, which we have so many studies now that show, oh, you can have degenerative disc disease and people have no pain, or you can have disc herniations and people have no pain. So how does someone start to understand, or how do you talk to a patient who maybe they even had a doctor who said, this is the worst spine I've seen in 15 years, or this is the worst knees I've seen in, I don't know how you're squatting, I don't know how you're doing anything, right? Because we also, as PTs, hear experiences from people like this, where they're told these images and these diagnoses are so incredibly bad. So how does someone who's living in chronic pain detach from the structural damage they've been told, or the image, into what's possible despite the fact that that image still might be there?
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways to approach that. But one way is just to do a parallel assessment of how much stress somebody has been through in their life, both past and present. On the symptomatic.me website of my nonprofit, which is the Association for the Treatment of Neuroplastic Symptoms, which is our technical term for, you know, brain to body conditions, we've got a 12-question quiz for self-assessment. And the more of those questions to which you answer yes, the more likely it is that your pain or illness are resulting from a neuroplastic process. So that's one way to kind of screen yourself. But, you know, when I'm listening to people, I'm listening for, you know, what stresses do you have in your life at the moment? Sometimes it's very simple what's going on. One of my patients, he only got his pain when he was driving to work. When he was driving home from work, he was fine, you know, so that kind of points the way to what was going on with him. Others, it's more complicated. A majority of my patients, in fact, were under stress as children. They had what we call adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs. And this is essentially any treatment of a child that you would never want for a child of your own, that would make you sad or angry if you saw it happening to a child you care about. So it can be something like out-and-out abuse or alcoholism or violence in the home, for example. But it can also be more subtle, where some of my patients were, through the best intentions of the parents, not allowed to feel their negative emotions. The parents were always kind of saying, oh, don't feel that way. Don't, get into that kind of thing and put that aside. And children lose the ability to understand who they are when they're not allowed to have their own emotions, or they're made to feel like second-rate people. Another one of my patients, the only time he got praise from his parents was when he did something better than his brothers and sisters could do it. And his brothers and sisters, he had three of them, were very accomplished people. So that didn't happen very often. And he ended up feeling like a failure when he grew up. And then that can play out into a number of stressful outcomes for adults. And he was having symptoms in multiple locations in his body. But we can uncover those issues, and we can help people to understand them and address them, and the symptoms start to come down in response to that. And even if it takes a while, people become very hopeful that they're finally understood, they're finally on the right track.
So when we're talking about these neuroplastic symptoms or conditions that would fall under this scope. I was looking through your stuff a little bit, and I saw things like irritable bowel syndrome. I saw things like just chronic fatigue, chronic pain. So can you just explain a little bit like how you might to a patient how this develops? I mean, Jen talked about how like people like to have something to connect their pain or their symptoms to. What are the, I know that you've given 7-hour lectures on this, but how can you explain it to somebody in a minute how this develops from our brain to our body?
Yeah, well, the brain is actually physically changed. There are magnetic resonance imaging studies now of the brain in people with these conditions that show that they are physically, structurally different than in people who don't have these conditions. One way to think about it is that the brain actually has to decide if it's going to give you a pain signal or not. So if you whack your thumb with a hammer, the thumb is not feeling the pain. The thumb is experiencing damage, and it sends a signal about that damage up to your brain, and your brain then has to decide that it's going to give you a pain signal so you won't damage your thumb any further. However, if you have the another situation where, let's say, you sprain your ankle while you're running from a predator, your brain is likely to decide that, no, you're not going to get pain in your ankle until you reach safety, because the pain is not going to serve you in that case. You need to get out of the dangerous situation. So your brain is constantly making decisions about this. And in the case of these conditions, which, again, migraines, chronic fatigue, irritable bowel, fibromyalgia, joint pain, spine pain, on and on, visual disturbances, dizziness, the brain is actually making an incorrect decision in response to stress in the person's life that has changed the structure. And it's giving you pain signals or causing disease or illness kinds of problems when there's nothing wrong. There's nothing physically wrong. And that happens to 1 in 5 adults. It's almost double the number of diabetics out there. And it's 2 out of 5 people that go to visit a primary care physician. So roughly 50 million people in the United States alone that suffer from this. And unfortunately, very few healthcare professionals that know the process for diagnosing and treating it.
So how does someone start to go about finding treatment if, like you said, it's so hard to even know who to go to and who to trust? Because typically, you know, the typical pattern is, okay, let's get some imaging done. Let's try some physical therapy. Let's, you know, so we continue to live in this model of it's a structural, it's something on your body, or it's internal, it's something within your body. So how do we start to decipher what can I do?
Yeah, what my colleagues and I advocate is that along with the physical evaluation, we should also be doing an evaluation for stresses in the person's life, past or present, and get a sense of, you know, how much they're dealing with. It's so amazing to me that people you would never guess are coping with anything out of the ordinary. And when you sit down and have a conversation with them about what they're dealing with, it can be really shocking in people you would never guess. So doing that assessment, for me, it's part of a complete evaluation. And then if we do find that there are some significant issues going on, either in the past or the present, there are a lot of resources available today that we didn't have, you know, 10 or 20 years ago. And it can start with, you know, the symptomatic.me website. We try to be a hub for evidence-based resources, starting with that self-assessment questionnaire. But there are self-help books available. Many people have improved substantially just by reading books that delve into the issues here. There are apps available. There's one called Curable. There's another one called Digestible that focuses on irritable bowel syndrome. There are videos. There's also a practitioner directory on our website of people who've taken extra training in the diagnosis and treatment of this condition. We've got video courses. We have an annual conference. One's coming up end of September 2025 in Boulder, Colorado. There's a podcast that I do called The Story Behind the Symptoms, where I interview patients much as I used to do in my office. So lots and lots of resources where people can learn about this, because knowledge is the pathway toward relieving of these symptoms.
And we'll do our best to link up a lot of those resources if people are interested or want to go look at some of that stuff. So for the average person sitting out there who might be saying, hey, I think this is me, or I think I have symptoms that fall under this category. I know you have 5 signs that an illness or pain that somebody is experiencing, 5 signs that might be indicators that what they're experiencing is stress related. What are those 5 signs?
Well, one of them is that the symptoms can fluctuate without rhyme or reason. A physical symptom is likely to get worse if you're using the affected body part. In neuroplastic symptoms, the fluctuation in the intensity of the symptoms tends not to be consistent. Let's put it that way. The triggers for it tend not to be consistent. Also, it can move from place to place. I see this a lot as a gastroenterologist in my patients with abdominal pain, that the pain can move from corner to corner in the abdomen. Another one is that symptoms can be multiple. People can have more than one condition at a time. They can have fibromyalgia, for example, and migraines, or they can have dizziness and irritable bowel syndrome, or they can have, 4 or 5 of them. One of my patients had my personal record patient had 27 different symptoms that he personally was suffering from. And, every single one of them was neuroplastic in origin. Wow. And they all responded to the same treatment. Other things that I look for it can be associated with anxiety or depression, and I want to make sure I uncover that. And many people don't feel particularly anxious or depressed, but when I start asking them about other symptoms connected to depression, such as poor sleep, poor energy, poor appetite, losing interest in activities they used to enjoy, feeling like their life is less meaningful or they're not seeing much of a future for themselves. Those are all symptoms of depression. Anxiety disorders. Many people have been so anxious for so long, they just don't feel that it's anything out of the ordinary for them. But I noticed that their symptoms can be much worse or more frequent when they're away from a safe environment. One of my patients never got her symptoms at home, which was safe for her. They always occurred when she was away from home. And that was, the body doesn't know whether you're at home or not, only your brain knows that. So that was a strong clue that this was a neuroplastic condition. So those are the kinds of things that we look for. Also, of course, a diagnostic evaluation that doesn't show a clear-cut physical cause. The spine is a particularly difficult one because most people over the age of 40 are going to have age-related abnormalities of their spine on an MRI. But as you pointed out earlier, so do most people with no symptoms at all. That's why it's important to do the evaluation for the psychosocial stresses and see how much of that is going on, especially in somebody who has no evidence of a damaged nerve. So they don't have numbness in the skin. They don't have muscle weakness. They don't have bowel or bladder problems. And in those people, 90% of the time, pain in the spine is neuroplastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's so cool when you connect the dots with the patient of like, I remember I had a patient one time and he's like, oh, I went on vacation. Symptoms were like basically gone. I went back to work and my shoulder pain was back. And I'm like, were you lifting your bag? Were you still doing things, and connecting those dots that you're still using your shoulder, but you're now in a different environment where you're putting less stress and being able to see that, I think, is such a powerful thing. So hopefully even just listening to this, people start to connect some dots for themselves of what they're experiencing and what they see. And, how does someone get out of the stress loop? Because I think the lives that we live a lot of times is, it's hard to see how you can get out of stress. Say me as a new mom, luckily I know a lot of these things, right? But I'm not getting great sleep and not always eating the best and trying to move as much as I can, so it's how does someone, if this is their life, if this is the job that they have, if this is the boss that they have, if this is the relationship they're in, or
they have 4 kids, you can't just ship off the kids and say, okay, I'm going to get rid of my stressors for a minute.
how does someone work around pain when they have to live in somewhat of a stressful environment?
Yeah, not everybody can have the luxury of making the changes that will bring their stress level down, but I think most people can find a way to make a few changes in the right direction. But it's true that many of my patients, one of their biggest issues is that they don't put themselves on the list of people they take care of. They are the kinds of people that are taking care of everybody else. You know, if it's the spouse or the kids or the neighbors or and people in a social group or in the workplace, and they're so focused on all of those needs that they never get around to doing anything fun for themselves. And many of my patients who have the most significant issues in that area, they grew up in a home environment that was troubled in some way that prevented them from taking enough time to play as children. And when we play as children, we are learning self-care skills. We are learning what we need to do for our own joy. And if you don't learn that as a kid, then it becomes very easy to be living your adult life as if on a treadmill you never step off. One of my patients was a champion athlete as a girl, but she did her sport before school, after school, and on weekends, starting at age 4. And she, you know, her dad apologized to her in high school for having pushed her too hard. She was very successful in her sport, but when I met her, she was in the emergency room where she had been all night long with a sudden attack of severe abdominal pain. And I talked to her about her lifestyle, and it was nonstop. I mean, she was working full time, husband working full time, coaching her daughters in her sport, coaching other people's kids, driving kids to out-of-state competitions, on the athletic club board of directors, no space in her life for herself. And it just caught up with her.
And yeah. I remember seeing that a lot too, with especially women, like you're saying, moms, it's like the list is just going on and on. And as they're talking about, it's almost like I would laugh because it's like, well, I have this pain, but I don't have time for pain because I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And it's like, well, can you just listen how we're getting a little elevated here? Just the stress environment in general.
Yeah.
But, and even I have been in a situation where I got in a car accident, my right shoulder blade shot up in pain, but just the acknowledgement of like, oh, I just, you know, got in a car accident, so that's why my shoulders hurt. I'm fine. It's structurally, I'm not like, it was a small accident. Everything's okay, but I'm stressed because now I have to deal with this. And the moment I acknowledged it, it's not like the stress is going to go away. I still have that. But the moment I acknowledged that that's where it came from, it wasn't because of damage, the pain went away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my prescription for that patient who was the athlete was that just to carve out a little time every week on a regular basis where she would find an activity, and it was going to take her some trial and error, but find an activity that had no purpose but her own joy. And that was kind of a new concept for her. She kind of looked at me and said, what am I going to do with this free time? I'm not really sure. She'd never learned how to play. But so all she could think of to do was go for walks in a park at first. But after about 6 weeks, you know, she was kind of thinking about what else might be fun. She decided to take piano lessons. She'd never done anything musical before, but she absolutely loved it. And that's when the pain went away.
That's so cool. And I think that that's really important for people to hear, that no matter how buried you feel by the stresses of life, I mean, we're talking about neuroplasticity and how amazing, yes, how amazing of a system this brain and our central nervous system and how it communicates and adapts. And it's like, if you feel buried by a million ton, you know, pile of dirt, one shovel at a time, our brain can adapt, and just that 10 minutes a day. And that's why I, when I was a young practitioner myself, would start with breath work. Cause I'm like, hey, if we breathe right, the brain can't ignore it. It's automatic, and it would just start.
And even that, you are doing something positive for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's taking the massive amount of attention you're putting on everybody else in the world, and you're just saying, I'm just going to take a little bit of time, and I'm just going to breathe. And that's a step in the right direction.
It's funny, we're talking about this, because in my first job, I was in an outpatient clinic, And I would get sent a lot of these problem patients, you know, because I would take the time with them and I didn't mind being with them. And I'm sure as you can maybe relate, I was a young provider. I had a difficulty separating work and emotionally investing myself in these patients. And when you're seeing 6, 7, 8 people a day that have stories like they have, I would bring home a lot of stress myself. And I started to develop my own between patients. I would call it my 1 minute reset. I would take 1 minute to duck into a dark room and do some breath work, get my nervous system to regulate a little bit so I could continue to show up. And that was an example of me taking care of myself so that I can then go and hopefully take care of the people that come into the clinic.
Yeah, that was a great example of doing some self-care. I was fortunate that these patients that we're talking about today were only 1/3 of my practice. The other 2/3, you know, I got to put endoscopes in people and cauterize things and snip things and do all of that kind of stuff that wasn't quite so emotionally draining as these other patients. But just randomly, sometimes I would have 5, 6, or 7 patients with neuroplastic conditions and some pretty difficult stories to listen to. And those were hard days. I will say that.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why it's so hard to hear and understand, I think, for people who are in these cycles, and maybe they get a little win and then feel like they go back. So how does someone continue to move forward in this way when maybe they have felt a little bit of hope, of feeling a little bit better, of understanding, okay, it's not all just structural and I don't, you know, but how do I not fall back into the cycle of pain again? Like, that's all some people have lived with.
Yeah, it's a great question. There are a lot of different ways to answer it, but I think the people that struggle with this the most almost always have been through adversity as children. And one of the outcomes of that is that they are made to feel like second-rate or worthless human beings as a result of that experience. And it can be anything. It can be, you know, one of my patients, her parents verbally and emotionally fought with each other on almost a daily basis, and she was the only child. She tried to be the peacemaker, and of course, she failed over and over again for years and just felt terrible about herself for not having solved her parents' problems and carried that burden of inferiority with her for a long time. It created a great deal of stress. It affected her close personal relationships, which tended to be with toxic people, because she just naturally fell into relationships with people who had problems and needs that she then tried to fix. So it plays out into adult personality traits and stresses. So I try to turn that around. I try to have people do an exercise. It is one way to imagine a child of your own or a child you care about growing up exactly as you did, and you have to watch it. And that gives people a more realistic concept of how much they had to go through as kids themselves. And if they can look at that and say, you know what, I had to be a pretty tough little kid, and to honor that little kid for how much they had to go through no fault of their own, you know, it's essentially equivalent to parachuting into a dangerous jungle as a toddler and having to find your way out. And if you can give yourself credit for that, if you can acknowledge the heroic perseverance that it took in some of these environments to make it through that and internalize a much more positive self-image, then it makes it easier to take care of yourself, to give yourself that time every week for self-care, to not put up with toxic people, to put boundaries around individuals that are causing you problems so that the stress that you're experiencing from those people goes down. If you feel in yourself like you deserve better than to be mistreated, if you feel in yourself that, you know, given everything you had to go through as a kid, you shouldn't have to put up with more of that as an adult, that really changes people's stress level. It changes their relationships. It changes their ability to care for themselves in various ways. Brings the stress level way down and the symptoms start to respond.
And I mean, just another amazing example of honoring and acknowledging somebody's journey. even if it's subconscious to them, even if they aren't, you know, actively aware that that is significantly impacting what they're feeling. So I know that throughout this conversation, we've been talking a lot about the components of your neuroplastic recovery therapy that you use with and have used so successfully with over 7,000 people dealing with these chronic and persistent conditions. Is there anything else you can tell us about your neuroplastic recovery therapy process that we haven't really touched on?
Well, it definitely starts with just listening to someone tell their story. It starts also with an assumption that we can alleviate those symptoms. You know, we're not just trying to help you live with them. We are actually trying to make them go away. And, you know, even people who've had severe symptoms can be successfully treated. One of my patients I was asked to see on her 70th day in the hospital for unexplained abdominal pain that she'd had for 18 months. She was getting morphine in massive doses around the clock. She had already seen 6 other specialists who had been unable to diagnose her. But by uncovering the stress in her life, we made significant progress. She was out of the hospital in a week, and she stopped taking all opioids 30 days after we met. Another patient, abdominal pains for 79 years, also successfully treated. Another patient had a completely paralyzed stomach, not the abdomen, but the organ of digestion. It was not contracting at all when we did a scan on him. Wow. And that was 100% from a stress that he was struggling with. But all of these patients successfully treated. So I want to give your viewers hope around this, that even if they've had this for years, even if it's been severe, we can make great progress with the neuroplastic recovery therapy. Maybe one other idea about it is that we do focus a lot on stressful personality traits. Many people struggling with this are perfectionists, or they're excessively self-critical, or they're what we call people pleasers, or they're in toxic personal relationships. All of those things, when you see where they came from, when you see the background that led to their development, it becomes a lot easier to change them. Triggers is another one. If you've got, for example, someone who mistreated you as a kid still in your life as an adult, learning to set boundaries around that person can make a big difference. And then finally, emotions. We haven't touched on that, but many of my patients have, they're kind of like dormant volcanoes on the outside with boiling magma of emotions on the inside. And we try to get people to be in touch with those. Many of them are a lot angrier or more fearful than they recognize. And if they can put those emotions into words, the emotions don't have to be expressed via the body in the form of symptoms.
I mean, it's fascinating to continue to hear. Are there other aspects that you tap into or that you encourage people to use as well? So I know we're talking a lot about stress, right? And the environment that you're putting yourself in, the people that you're around, all of that. But does stress also come in forms of food, sleep, hydration, you know, getting outside, movement? So are these different stressors that you touch upon with people as well? Is it a whole lifestyle, or is it mainly just that environmental kind of stress?
Well, we definitely want a good lifestyle for people, healthy diet, good sleep hygiene, exercise, time spent in nature, breath work, mindfulness. You know, all of those things are valuable for re-regulating a nervous system, and, you know, absolutely use those. We also want to address if people are coping with their stresses in what we might call toxic ways. So substance abuse, certain behavioral addictions, which can be any of a variety of things, work, sex, food, shopping, exercise, gambling, pornography, the internet, you know, on and on. Anything that you are doing to the point where it's harmful to you can be a form of coping for this. And that's really all those things are. Many people are ashamed when they have these addictions, but in fact, they're just forms of self-treatment. And if we can figure out what it is you're treating, That makes a huge difference in being able to let go of the addiction. Cutting behavior is another one. Eating disorders is another one. These are forms of self-treatment. And we need to go after the same kinds of underlying stresses that are causing the neuroplastic symptoms in the body can be causing these toxic forms of coping as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on that. And for a lot of people, it can sound overwhelming to hear all those things listed off in tandem. Oh, well, we need to focus on your sleep and your hydration and your nutrition and your movement and your breath work, and which is why I appreciate that it starts by being able to hear someone's story, and it starts by being able to get to that root cause to then treat other compensatory behaviors, to then be able to insert that one thing, that one small 10, 15 minute carve out in their day that's going to help start to turn the neurological boat per se. And the story that you just mentioned that really sticks with me is somebody who had been having their symptoms for 79 years and they were successfully treated. Like, that's a true testament that our brain is powerful enough to be able to change regardless of what stage of life we're in, regardless of how long we've had these symptoms. And I think it's a testament to the work that you're doing and continuing to do to help all these people. So I just really appreciate you taking the time to be here today to share the work that you do. Where could people go to? I know you've mentioned some of your resources, but where can people go to either learn more from you or find out ways to work with you?
Yeah, well, I'm not in practice anymore because I'm teaching full time and running the Association for Treatment of Neuroplastic Symptoms, but we've got a hub of information at symptomatic.me, including that self-assessment quiz. The book that I wrote for patients is called They Can't Find Anything Wrong. I used to hear that phrase from so many patients that I ended up making it the title of my book. But, you know, there are so many good resources available now, and you can pursue these resources in parallel with whatever you are doing with your medical clinicians or your physical therapist. There's no contradiction in doing both. And it usually becomes clear fairly early on where the greatest success is going to be.
Yeah, I think that's so huge to be able to tell people and acknowledge and just starting and just getting started, doing the self-assessment, doing seeing what else is possible is, you know, hopefully it gives people hope that there is something possible, and just getting started, being open and exploring, you know, is the first step. So thank you so much for coming on and talking and sharing the stories of others who have been able to find success and what you do for people. I think it's so incredibly important. It's missing a lot in our medical system, and I hope that we continue to do better for people. Such a great episode. If you heard something that you feel like can really help someone either get out of chronic pain or just hear something different, please pass this episode along. It's how we get the word out to other people in order to help them feel something different in their bodies. And of course, if you haven't gotten on that VIP list, trust me, this is a list you do not want to miss out on, because you are going to get exclusive discounts that don't come anywhere here on the podcast, through social media, anywhere else. You can only get it here, and you're going to want to be in that fall challenge. So that is docgenfit.com/VIP. We're also going to have it linked up in the show notes, but docgenfit.com/VIP. Get on the list. Come join the community.